Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio. Now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Good evening, everyone. This is Michael Anthony Ingram. I am here tonight with James Coates. He's a poet, performer, and educator. James, are you with me? James? We're having some technical difficulties. We'll be right there with you. Some technical difficulties here. One more time. Good evening, James.
Michael, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Oh, my goodness.
We did it. We are together.
I don't know. I don't know what was going on there.
I don't either. But there was a thunderstorm here in D.C., so that could be part of the problem. You never know.
Okay, I was like worried.
I was too. Well, it's good to hear your voice. I'm glad you're with me tonight.
Glad to be here.
Great. Well, let's begin this journey, okay?
All right.
I'd like to begin by asking you the following question. I pose this question to all of my guests. The very first question, what is poetry to you?
To me, poetry is the voice of the universe manifested through the lived experience.
Wow. Tell me more.
Well, I believe that at the heart of poetry, it's about connection. So we don't feel so alone in the world. And so I feel like it is the universe speaking to us to share what's inside with the world around us, and part of what we have inside comes from the experiences we go through in life.
Oh, very nice. Very well stated. What are some of the predominant themes of your work?
I would say that, probably like most individuals, the write poetry stuff revolves around family, love. For me, love, romance, and relationships was initially where I got into poetry. And then from there, it branched into other areas of my life, fatherhood. And right now I am, you know, heavily into to writing about social justice and the being the change we want to see in the world.
All right, very nice. Please share a poem.
Sure. This poem is titled Planting, and it's from my new collection, Midnight in Mad Dreams. What does hope look like in a doomed tree? Nothing if not a seedling, a piece of potential to grow. Naked, green, and unsure, drenched in stormy rains, cast among unfertile mulch, nevertheless, roots dig deep. Some would see you perish, and yet you're right here, reaching beyond the shadows for your place in the light, a miracle made witness as each new dawn is a prayer answered. End of poem.
Oh, very nice. How does a poem begin for you, with an idea, a form, or an image?
All of them, really. I feel like it's very much like childbirth. It could come out different ways. It just depends on how the poem wants to be born. So sometimes it starts with an idea, and I'll brainstorm from there. Other times I'll try to start with the form itself and set up, you know, the parameters of the form and then build the poem from there. And sometimes the poem comes from living life, or, you know, you see a picture on a walk, or an ephrastic poem visiting a museum. And so it just depends on you know, what's the inspiration is for that day.
All right, very nice. Please share another.
This one is also from Midnight in Mad Dreams. It's called Still Life. They tell me you don't exist, and some do believe that lie, because they don't show it, only promote the negatives, hide away the actual photography. I know the truth of reality. I watch the results every day. With my own eyes, I see us loving each other, dating, courting, marrying, birthing babies, building homes, staying together to raise futures. There is an art to how we love, a muse that inspires me daily, joy that washes the body tender, like waterfalls feeding newborn forth. I picture nations' origins formed in the bosom of your embrace, protection held gentle in the muscle fibers of powerful arms. Speak truth to the brown earth. Watch it crack open, canyon wide, and still not be large enough to encompass our affection. From remote villages to bustling cities, we are drawn into one another, the way night calls to day to sleep safely beneath indigo sheets. End poem.
Wow. That was incredible. You know, over the course of the last several years, I've interviewed a number of people, and people write everywhere. Where do you go to write?
Workshops.
Workshops? Tell me more. Tell me about the workshops.
Yeah. So really, during the pandemic, a lot of in-person workshops moved online, and so I had access to them. And so I began taking workshops from different organizations like Spoken Literature Arts Movement in Los Angeles, Poetry University, out of like Baltimore, the Poetry Lab, and what was the new one that just started recently? Yeah, just all over the place. Everything. Recently, I just finished one, Imaginative Storm, and that was based in North Carolina. So really, it's made it access to different workshops across the country available, and I just try to soak it all in. But usually it's from home, that's my actual writing.
Okay. All right then. You know, all great writers have great writing influences. Who are some of yours, and what makes them great in your eyes?
Some current writers that I really appreciate. One is Rudy Francisco, and I was able to take a workshop with him recently, which was wonderful. And what I appreciate about his poems are that they're not overly complicated so that you get lost in maybe the college literacy poetry kind of experience, but they're not too too like Instagram poem where it's like truisms. So I feel like he blends both of those worlds really well, where when you read the poem, it's on surface level, you can read it and get something out of it, but if you dig deeper into the poetry, you can also like see, like, wow, this is really constructed well. And his use of metaphor and bringing you into places that you don't expect is really powerful.
Right.
And then one
Anyone
other
else?
Person, if I can.
Yes.
Bridget Bianca, which is a Southern California poet, Los Angeles poet, that I recently connected with during the pandemic. I got her book, Be Trouble, and it touched my heart so much. Like, it was probably the best poetry book I read in 2020. And I feel like it connected me to my experience in Los Angeles, all the joys and the pain of having lived there for some years. And I could really relate to everything in it. And I was like, this, if I want to write a book about Los Angeles, this would be the kind of book I would want to write. And so I just love the way that she can work a poem into to an experience that is, that allows you to feel seen.
Name is again?
Bridget Bianca.
Bridget Bianca. All right. Please share another poem with us.
Okay, this poem is written about bodies, and it's titled A Movement to Stand In. Bodies built bold and brazen, temples to connect us to God within. Start righting the wrongs, love. Worship in this radiance. Within temples to connect us to God. Worthy of bellowing praise. Worship in this radical. In being found treasure. Worthy of bellowing praise. Let confidence flow naturally. Treasure found in being. Born like dawn's light. Serenity. Naturally confidence flows. Lost in time moments. Serenity born like dawn's light. Revolutions embrace the movement. In moments lost, start righting wrongs. Embrace the movement. Bold and brazen bodies built revolution. End poem.
Wow. That was very powerful. You're, based on my understanding of your work, you're an old pro at this. What was an early experience where you learned that poetic language had power? And do you come from a literary background yourself?
Poetic language has power. That is a difficult one. I can't think of a specific moment. I can say that when I was in high school, my senior year, I took a creative writing class, and we created a literary magazine as part of the class. And I guess that was my first experience looking at other people's poems and editing and deciding what was going to go in the literary magazine and what was going to go out. And I remember some classmates shared poems, and I was like, wow, I didn't know that some of the students at the school were going through such things. And some mm-hmm. things were very similar to mine, and some were really like difficult personal family circumstances. And I was like, wow, like other people should be able to hear this, and they may be also going through it. And so that's where I realized like poetry can connect people to experiences that they're going through and kind of speak for those experiences. And then I think the second part of the question was, do I have a literary background? Not formally. I started writing poetry early, probably middle school, and wrote up and through high school, early college, but I didn't go to college for writing or poetry. And I actually took an extended break from it in pretty much most of my 20s, and then I picked it up again in my 30s, and really for the last 5 years, I've been heavily into learning as much as I can and producing work.
Do you think, based on your experiences, that you were meant to be a poet?
I think so, yeah. I think.
Tell me more. I know when I ask that question, people are like, wow, that's whether I'm meant to be a poet, I don't know. But tell me, please.
Yeah, I feel the fact that I was pulled back and possibly called back to this work, and very much like if you're familiar with scripture, Jonah tried to like not go deliver the message that God wanted him to deliver, and so I feel like I, stepped away and was like, I'm gonna go do other stuff. I'm gonna go, do business consulting, and that didn't happen. Like, I was pulled back to the poetry, like, this is where you're supposed to be now, and so, like, get to work. So from that sense, I do feel like I was supposed to be a poet. Again, I did start writing at an early age, part of that experience made me an empath, a person that's very in touch with others emotionally, and so a lot of my work is influenced by that, and trying to capture others' feelings and the experience and the stories that they themselves may not be able to vocalize or necessarily want to tell people what's going on, being able to capture that voice and that experience within poems and being able to bring it into the world so that others can connect with it is, I feel like, really important work for me.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Speaking of being an empath, do you think that someone can be called a poet if they don't feel strong emotions?
A good poet? I don't know. I think that's part of what makes a good poet is that you can look at an experience and see how people can connect with that experience, and then doing the work to write it, to create it in a way that uses all the tools of language and words to, you know, tell a beautiful story, even if it's has a difficult message or comes from a difficult place. Part of it is having something to say, and then the other part is how are you saying that thing? Are you saying it in a creative, beautiful, you know, different way than I guess other storytelling mediums?
All right. Well, please share another poem.
So this poem is also out of Midnight in Mad Dreams, and it's titled Girls Just Want to Be Left Alone. Her hips spill out her jeans the way BP spills oil in the Pacific, thick, black, and hazardous, or how nosy moms spill gossip out of their mouths about her, too tight, too fast, they say. Her body squeezes into the denim packaging like candy man picture unwrapping, painting her as a sweet treat, but she is only an adolescent, striving to maintain her innocence. Her curves placed on a pedestal atop a mountain of patriarchy. Now more than ever, her full legs can't carry the intense weight of societal standards forced on her. Even when she did attempt to hide her budding womanhood, the sound of her thighs rubbing became a dog whistle, causing untamed stray men to circle. Why can't those wide hips just be hers to grow into before they're first forced to give birth to the desires and the imagination of men twice her age? End poem.
That's a hard-hitting work, James.
Yeah,
tell me
so
more
I guess
about the genesis
that,
that
would
poem.
Be a impact one.
Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Tell me more about the creation of that particular piece.
Yeah, so it sometimes I try and take myself out of my lived experience and write poems about what others are going through. And so this poem was about some of the younger friends and family, women, or teenagers going to become women, and how as they develop physically, older men are attracted to them and try to pursue them. And physically they may look like a grown woman, but mentally they still need to grow up and to be an adult. And so, you know, it would be nice if their experience didn't have to involve going through that at such a young age.
Yes. Wow. And that brings up a question. You know, so much is happening in our world today. We're in the recovery process of from a pandemic, hopefully the recovery part of it. What do you view as being the role of a poet in modern-day society?
What do I think the role of a poet is in modern-day society?
Yes. What should their role be?
Oh, okay. It all depends on the poet, I think.
Okay.
I think there are poets that are here to entertain us and to, you know, say beautiful things that make us feel good, and we need those. We do want to hear poems that feel good, that are beautiful and speak of love and all the sweet stuff. And then there are poets that give us, you know, hard truths and talk about difficult subject matter. And there is a lot in the world that's going on to talk about those things. And as I moved from love poems into social justice poems, I realized how important it is to not be silent on those matters, to talk about what's going on in the world. And that's how I came with the creation of Midnight in Mad Dreams. It is a book that is aimed at fighting racism and oppression through the use of poetry. And so I explore that question. You know, how can poetry be used to spur change in the world? And so that's definitely a role that a poet can take, is to try and facilitate change. And I also created the Be the Change workshop to talk about social justice issues and poets to write. But I don't want to say that that's the only way to be a poet, is to talk about those things.
Mm-hmm. Where is your book available, or your books, where are they available?
So my first two books are available on Amazon. All the Ways You're Wonderful and Midnight and Mad Dreams are both available on Amazon. I think I mentioned Midnight and Mad Dreams. Midnight and Mad Dreams is not out yet. Currently, we're looking for a publisher to decide who wants to publish it. It is complete, just waiting to see who wants to pick it up. But If I Had Lived and All the Ways You're Wonderful are available on Amazon right now.
Where does your third book fit into your career?
The third book is, I feel like, an educational tool.
Okay.
And so, as I was writing the poems, about the various subject matter related to social justice. And I asked myself, how do I use poetic form, traditional poetic forms, in a way that reshapes them to be politically conscious poems? And so there are many different forms: pantoons, haikus, bops. I even created a style of my own in there, so that not only does the reader enjoy the poems that are being shared, but it could be brought into a classroom, and the form of poetry can also be taught, as well as, you know, the content in the poems. And so I'm very excited about this third book, even just alone the creation of it during the pandemic, but the idea of it being used as a tool to highlight these key issues, and then to also be able to teach how to construct different forms of poetry in a rousing call for justice kind of way.
All right, very nice, very nice. What do you think surprised you the most about the book, or the creation of the book?
What do I think, what the most?
What surprised you the most about creating the book?
What surprised me the most? How it evolved.
Okay.
Originally, it was, the idea was simple. I want to write a book kind of about the Black experience and what that was like. And as I started writing and developing and workshopping, I realized the commonality, the shared umbrella of oppression, you know, existed not just in the Black experience, but there was an intersectionality oppressive forces working against many different people. So the book has poems about patriarchy and misogyny, about water rights and immigration, about the Capitol storming and protesting, and Breonna Taylor, George Floyd. So the evolution of understanding how, because it started with the question, how can poetry be used to fight racism and oppression?
Yes.
So then exploring that, the book evolved to be what it is now. And out of that came the workshop as well, to creating space for people to talk about the social justice issues, to be able to write about the social justice issues on their own, and to be able to bring more poems into the world and provide dialogue.
You know, before I ask you to share another piece of your work, I wanted to know more about Be the Change, social justice writing workshops, and as well as Lift Our Voices Education. I mean, these seem to be two passions of yours.
Yes. So part of it was in the writing process, I'm reading other poets, I'm studying other authors and in social justice and reform, and I realized, like, if a person picks up the book and they read the book, they may be able to relate to it, learn something from it, be able to speak on it. But more could be offered, and so I was like, yes, the book is great, but then there also needs to be a place where people can talk about the issues and write about the issues. Like there, and so when I created the Be the Change workshop, I created as a name your own price, because I wanted it to be affordable for anyone that attended, no matter their economic situation. To be able to come in and meet, talk about these subject matters. And we've talked about immigration. We've talked about women's rights in there. We've talked about a number of different over-policing so far in the workshops. And we're definitely going to be moving forward and talk about more social justice issues in the future. But that's just the start. As we grow, hopefully we'll be moving into doing, working with the youth in schools, and also moving into artivism and using art to also tackle social justice issues. And so sharing our voice, being able to inspire people to try and make their communities and the world around them better.
Oh, very nice. I commend you for your efforts, my friend. I really do. Please share another poem.
Okay, so this is a poem that was modeled after Jericho Brown's duplex. It's called Spiders. What is it that makes spiders so scary to us? They are okay as long as they are far out of sight. As long as they are far out of sight, they are okay. We won't share our homes with these creatures. No, we won't share this home with predators that crawl into our imaginations with malicious intent. Crawling into imaginations with our malicious intent, dark eyes, blackened flesh, long limbs, definitely dangerous. Eyes that long, darkened limbs, black flesh, dangerously defiant. Living life, weaving webs, catching food and making babies. Wicked webs catches babies, living life and makes them food. Always been here, always will be. We can learn peace. Can we learn peace? Here will be, have been, always, always. Make those spiders so terrifying, they mean nothing to us. End poem.
What is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice?
How would you break down speaking voice?
Well, do you sound the same? Do you sound the same? Whether you're writing it as when you're speaking it? Or does something else take over? Another part of you?
That is a good question.
Okay. See, that's why they pay me the big bucks, James.
For the most part, I think I do sound the same. My belief in how I share my thoughts and my opinions, I strive to come from a perspective of love. And so when I sit down to write my pieces, I also try to bring that perspective into the poem, even if it's talking about cool topics and harsh material. I try to come from a perspective of love and then also try to imagine who in the room maybe doesn't have a voice or hasn't been seen and try and capture that as well. Somewhere around the middle of my second book, I realized that it's going to be challenging for me to tell the stories in the poetry I want to tell, because I'm very narrative-based, if it's always me as James doing the speaking. And so I decided to break with that and branch out. And so sometimes the voice in the poem is from a feminine perspective. Sometimes the voice in the poem is from a masculine perspective. Sometimes it is from me, my perspective, and sometimes it's from a different perspective. So I didn't want to limit it to kind of the first person I in all of my poems, and so I tried to expand that.
Share another poem.
So this poem is about Los Angeles, and there was a special police unit that used to police Los Angeles in the 90s, early 90s. And so I wrote about that. It's called Terror Squad. You don't belong here, boy, but South Central is my neighborhood. You know I run these streets. If I see you again, pow, the end. South Central is my neighborhood, but it has never felt like a safe home. Pow, my end if I see him again. I've seen his gang in blue do it. Here has never felt like a safe home. Terrorized when we walk out the door. I've seen his gang in blue do it. Murder a man on the block. Terrorized when I walk out the door. I lived through the days praying. Saw a man murdered on the block. And no justice was served. praying I live through this day. They pull up, jump out with pistols and serve no justice. Protected bullies with badges. They pull up and pull out pistols. I know you run these streets. Bullies with protected badges. Boy. End poem.
You know, some poets claim that a poem is like a living creature. Once it's out there, there's not much you can do to correct or improve it, while others edit meticulously, not leaving much from the original draft form. What is your take on it?
Usually, I try to not self-edit in the process of writing it. I am very much a poet that likes to get the prompt or the idea in my head, sit down, and just free write what I'm thinking, what's coming to mind, and then going back in and kind of chopping it up and keeping what I want and tossing the rest out. But sometimes it does come line by line, word by word, and it's what's formed is formed right there on the computer screen or the page, and it's kind of edited line by line. So it just depends.
Just depends. I can understand that. Our poets have several words that come up over and over and over again, words or sentences they just can't help but use in their work. What are three of your absolute favorite words to use?
I like eyes for some reason. I feel like maybe I'm a very visual person. I am an artist, so like, yeah,
okay.
I guess I'm a very visual person.
All right.
The eyes themselves. Well, let me backtrack. When I say like I am an artist, my degree in school is actually in art.
Very nice.
I have a BFA. So the visual components like the eyes come up a lot. Other words, love maybe. Some friends affectionately call me the love poet, so love definitely comes up in
a
lot of poems.
Mr. Loving Words on Instagram. Mr. Loving Words.
Yes, Mr. Loving Words. I love the words, and I love too. So
all right.
Love would be another one. Eyes, love, and then let me think, third one. Maybe future, because I'm thinking about what comes next, what's after
okay.
now. And so I'm always looking forward and ahead to with hopeful eyes.
Oh, very nice. Nicely stated. Please share another poem.
Sure. So this next poem, you asked me the question earlier about how does it come in the writing process. And so this one is one that came line by line, and I wrote it earlier today. And it is it is about Britney Spears and what's going on with her right now. It's titled To Break a Leg. To break a leg, we raise people high onto man-made pedestals, shower them with praise, wet as uncontrollable tears. Expect them to dance while photos flash bright lights into the eyes. Disorienting shouts of, we are not entertained. Do something miraculous. Then sit back, watch the show. See how they balance a life as we stack more pressure atop their Hollywood crown. Wait for them to slip up, make a mistake, because we love a good fall from grace. Then say, see, we they knew they could not handle the pressure while searching for some new starlet to take their spot. When do we realize we have been setting up from the beginning to break a leg and everything else? End poem.
Wow. Writers and poets write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to their audience. Others write because to stay silent is not an option. Why do you write, James?
Yeah, I don't think silence is an option for me.
Okay.
I think I have to speak on matters. But I don't think that's necessarily why I write. Initially, I began writing for me to be able to capture feelings I didn't feel like I could share with other people. And I feel like a lot of poets start from that place. But the moment I decided that I was going to start sharing my work, it became about the audience and who I was going to be sharing my work for. The individuals that are listening to me are giving me their time, which is the greatest currency any of us have. And so I want to respect that and be able to write in a way that they can feel touched by the poem, seen and appreciated in the poem. And that part really brings me joy in the process of sharing. And so I'll give you a recent experience. I wrote for Juneteenth. We had a performance in Orange County, and it's my first outdoor experience since COVID hit. And I shared one of my poems from my second book, All the Ways You're Wonderful, titled Hair Care. And after I did my set and I got off stage, I was introduced to a young lady that said that the poem brought her to tears because she had the poem really resonated with her. And so I feel like as a poet, to know that people are connecting with your work and feel seen in your work is, for me, definitely all I can ask for.
That was going to be one of my questions. What for you is a measure of success?
So yeah, that is part of my measure for success. Definitely, it's how you know a poem has done its job. But also part of success is understanding that the creation of the poem, it's by itself a success. So once you've created it, you brought it into the world, you birthed it, that alone is something to celebrate, that it is now here. There was once nothing, and now through the process of creation, something exists here in this world to gift someone else, and we gift it when we share. And so that is also a measure of success for the poet to write it, and then when it hits and it resonates with an audience, the crowd, you know, it's done its job by bringing them to on the journey you want to take them, or to the feeling you wanted to sit with them. That is the rewarding part. Like, yes, it's done what I wanted it to do. And if it doesn't, it doesn't make it a failure. It just means maybe the poem isn't finished and you can go back and rework it and see how it can do the job. And also understanding that sometimes you don't know who or which poem is going to touch someone. So you may think the poem sucks and it's garbage and not your favorite poem, but someone may need the message in that poem. And you don't know that they needed it until you share it and they let you know. They tell you, hey, this really meant something to me right now. I was going through this thing. I lost someone or I just broke up. And, you know, your words captured that experience for me.
Wow. Again, nicely stated. I agree with what you said 100%. What do you hope that readers get from encountering your work?
Well, I have in my bio a line about trying to capture authentic self-expression, and that's kind of difficult to, like, break down. You talk like, how do you show up as your most authentic self?
Yes.
And that can mean different things for different people, and so for me, I think it means like trying to be honest in my poems as much as possible, and being able to share a place from a place of honesty. People write poems for different reasons, and some people write competitively and, you know, write for judges to critique and not necessarily for audiences. And so when I think about writing the poem, I think about who I want the poem to reach, the audience I want it to reach, and how I want it to connect to them. And so at the end of the day, that audience is kind of why I'm in the business of sharing the poems, and so it kind of starts and ends with them.
All right. Well, we have time for one more poem. Please favor us again.
Okay, one more. Let me find a poem that will work. Okay. Here is a poem titled Scarecrow's Watch. You are the sunflower in my day and have been since you first sprouted out of unforgiving clay, wanting nothing more than your piece of dirt for an opportunity to grow, a chance to call this land home, a warm embrace instead of cold steel on outstretched sleeves, to sip refreshing dreams of safe sunsets in free fields. All I am left with is time, ages to reflect on how powerless I am to keep you from being pulled apart. The hue of your petals, a bullseye, a hated crop, this tortured target, your inheritance, an ever-present anguish, destruction by blade or bullet, both designed to chop down life. I sometimes wish I never planted you, a black seed life intended on uprooting before you could fully bloom in this tempestuous American soil. End poem.
I was amazed with your work when I heard you several weeks ago, last week. And I continue to be amazed. You're an incredible artist, James.
Oh, thank you.
Incredible
I'm
artist.
Glad that I didn't bore you today.
No, not at all. I wish we had more time. I really, really do. What's next for you creatively? You're waiting on a publisher. After your book is out,
mm-hmm.
What's next for you creatively after that?
That's a great question. I woman told me today I need a CD. So, possibly a poetry CD in the future. I'm going to have to work on figuring out how to do that. Definitely, we're going to try and grow the Lift Our Voices education to bring more programming to the community. I'm going to try and get a workshop that teaches form as a poetry form, as a form of protest. Some of the examples I shared from the book today, using form to create poems related to social justice. And then also a workshop about rewriting our stories and reimagining our origins and the stories we tell ourselves and how to reframe that as we create the future we want. So I guess more writing is coming in the future.
Well, how can readers stay in touch? How can listeners stay in touch with you? Where can we find you?
Definitely Instagram at Mr. Loving Words is probably the best. I post poems on there pretty regularly. Then also Facebook at James Coates, if you want to follow me on there. Those are probably the two best places.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for spending time with me tonight. We were finally able to make it happen. You knew it was happening when I didn't know it was happening.
Yes, well, here's the thing. If I didn't see you last week, I probably wouldn't have realized. Like, I knew it was coming up, but I was like, it's buried in my email somewhere. I don't know where. And, like, I know it's coming soon, though. And then we just happened to see each other last week. And I was
you
like,
you could have knocked
yeah.
me over with a feather. You could have knocked me over with a feather. Because we had not connected again. But we made it happen.
It was meant to
and
be.
And I don't want this to be a one-time deal. I want to invite you to come back and share more of your work and talk more about Lift Our Voices education. And I just want you to be a frequent visitor to this show.
Yeah, definitely. We won an award for Lift Our Voices education because the arts community views poetry and art as second responders during the pandemic.
Oh, really?
And so,
wow.
Yes, art is they consider second responders. You know, the nurses and stuff, first responders. But artists that capture, you know, all the experiences that were going on last year and even up to now, you know, have a vital role in our society and you know, keeping us connected.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you.
Well, I want to say good night to you. And again, thank you for spending time with us. And as I share with our listening audience every week, let poetry ring. Be safe. Be careful out there. Good night, everybody. Take care. Good night, James.
Good night.
You have just listened to the Quintessential Listening Poetry Online Radio Podcast with your host, Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, and make sure to catch our next episode.